We're good.
Welcome to episode 5 of WP Dev Table. Today we're doing a show on creating and maintaining a commercial plugin with Brent Shepherd. If you haven't watched WP Dev Table before, this is a show about a discussion about tools, best practices, tips, and most importantly, of course, WordPress. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you can follow us on WP Dev Table. You can find us on Facebook, WP Dev Table. Or you can go to our website, wpdevtable.com, and subscribe to the mailing list there if you don't like using social media. So my name's Bronson, and I'm from Brisbane. I work for a company called Senza, and we do WordPress commercial theme development and plugin development. And my co-host is Jason Resnick, who's from New York. I'll let you introduce yourself, Jason.
Sure. Jason. I'm an independent web developer, WordPress web developer. Basically, I do a lot of consulting. Sorry, I sliced my hand before the thing. So, basically, I do independent consulting for designers and agencies, and basically making sure that their projects are successfully launched. I'm excited to be attending WordCamp New York here in a couple of weeks, I guess. And as always, as long as I'm not the one waking up early in the morning and Bronson is, that's always a good thing.
Excellent. So I'd like to welcome our guest, Brent Shepherd, to the Dev Table this week. He's actually a Brisbaneite who now lives in San Francisco. So he's in the Tech Central. If you don't know much about Brent, he's actually started the first WooCommerce business, which is called ProsPress, but he's got a lot of great background. He's been a speaker at many meetups and WordCamps around the world. He's been an organizer of WordCamp Melbourne and Gold Coast. He's created a commercial theme called 5.3 on WordPress. He's also created numerous .org plugins, and he's also created a lot of WooCommerce plugins, which is basically his specialty now. You might know him from WooCommerce subscriptions. So, yeah, feel free to introduce yourself, Brent.
Thanks for joining the show, guys. I'll point out that ProsPress isn't the first WooCommerce business. SkyVerge have been around probably about a year, 18 months, and they're about four people. So, yeah, they certainly got in first and are doing awesome stuff. But, yeah, everything else you said, as I said before the interview, is basically the last 5 or 6 years of my life in 10 to 15 seconds, so thanks.
Cool. All right, so I guess the first question is, how did you get your start in WordPress? What are your WordPress roots?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was similar to a lot of people where it was just playing around with a few different CMSs at the time or even blogging tools at the time and just installing them or signing up for, I can't remember if I signed up for .com before I installed .org on a server. I think it might have been installing .org first. And I can't even remember why I was originally doing it. Maybe to set up a blog, but I was certainly just playing around with different CMSs and exploring ways to publish online. And, you know, as is the common story, it sort of was head and shoulders above the other ones I tried in the 30 minutes or hour I gave each one. I felt like I basically got to exactly where I wanted to be with WordPress, whereas I was still playing around with the others.
Hmm. Cool. And then from there, taking into a more of a being a contractor role and doing things like that, where did you get your start there? Or were you working full time somewhere and you did it there, or was there a contract that you nailed and then went and did that? Or
So I was working full time for a .NET software company actually, and they were running .NET Nuke on their to manage their website and sort of a custom built store and all these kind of things which were really, really quite painful in the day job, but yeah, it was that was my first serious full time job out of uni, and it was cool being in like a small software company. It was based in Canberra, but I really loved the idea of working for a product company, and certainly that was what I wanted to do eventually, to create a product company, because that's what the company I was working for in Canberra was, I started. Once I'd started blogging on WordPress and just sort of playing around with it, I started to see how it would be really cool to use that model of WordPress.com and multi-site and do something in e-commerce. And what I was originally playing with on my sort of nights and weekends was playing around with an auction slash marketplace plugin on top of WordPress.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And it was actually called Prosperous. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's funny that... Which is why I was able to get, you know, the domains and Twitter handle and everything, because I got them all 5 years ago, even though the company's only just been named it.
Yeah, right. Cool. So I guess next question is, what was your first WordPress plugin that you ever wrote? Can you remember?
I'm trying to think. I think, so certainly Prosperous was the first really big one that I started to tackle, which I think was this incredibly stupid thing to do, to go, all right, I'm going to learn... stupid and effective at the same time, but deciding to write an enormous plugin on a new platform that is going to be your first, or you have plans to make your first commercial plugin, is a terrible idea, because it takes an incredibly long time to write. I can't remember, it was 6 to 12 months easily of like two nights, three nights a week, and maybe half a day on the weekend or one day on the weekend. Just playing around and writing it. That was certainly the first big one that I was working on. But then the first one I ever actually released was one that I came across when I was playing with that, or a problem I had when I was playing with that, and it was, I think it was multi-site user management, but it may have been MapCap. But it's interesting comparing the two, because those are like tiny little plugins which I still maintain today, still work today, because they do one little thing. I don't know how many lines of code they are, but they're less than 1,000 lines of code. People seem pretty happy with them, and they just sort of keep on ticking along, whereas Prosperous was this monster which I released. No idea of how I was going to sustain it commercially. And I think it was an interesting start to have either end of the spectrum on those first plugins.
Yeah, so you pretty much threw yourself in the deep end and learned how to swim. I was just thinking that, like, for such a massive plugin, there's so many functions in WordPress that we all know now because we've used it for so long that do so many magical things. You were probably rewriting a lot of those and not even knowing those functions existed. So the learning there would have been huge.
and that was part of the fun part, because when you don't know it, you write it, and then like 6 months later, you find out there's a function which does that, or you know, things like rewrite rules or taxonomies, and even when I was writing it, I think when I first started writing it, custom post types didn't exist. And then between when I like first released it and when I'd started writing it, custom post types were created. So then it was like, well, these are brilliant. I've got to use these. I'll get rid of all that other stuff I'm doing. And then you know, custom taxonomies and all the rest of it.
Yeah. So I guess from there, that was your first plugin. You obviously got a taste for theming as well, and you released a theme called 5.3, which is one of the earliest parallax themes for WordPress that I saw. So you obviously saw a niche there and went about writing that one. How did it go? And you released that on your own rather than through ThemeForest. So give us a bit of an idea of your experience with that and what people could look out for.
Yeah, so that I was doing... doing Prosperous at the time still. It was a free plugin available, and I built like a prosperous.org website and forums around it, but I needed to put up like a site around the company that was actually the sort of shelf company or the umbrella company behind it. To do that, I thought, oh, this parallax thing is really cool. Or a guy I was working with at the time was like, oh, have you seen this parallax site? And I checked it out and was like, wow, that's cool. The typical parallax effect, impulse effect of wow, shiny, pretty. Like, so I thought, well, you know, there's nothing doing this in WordPress. Let's build it, and we can use it for our own site. And if we do it smart, then we can release it as a commercial theme, because they were all the rage back in those days. It went pretty well. It certainly, because it always pays to be first or very early on in business, because you're the only option when people are searching for things like parallax theme and everything like that. And I remember like early on, I was like doing some Google ads and things like that, but certainly like a lot of the traffic was just coming organically, because a few posts had talked about it, or I'd mentioned it in the comments of posts talking about parallax design and how to implement it and some of the challenges I'd had and things I'd learned and stuff like that. So it just sort of did well from there.
Cool. And how did you handle support? Thing was on your own system?
All BB Press. So one of the big reasons why I sold it through my own site and not through not through ThemeForest. I did submit it to ThemeForest, but it got rejected, and I didn't have the persistence to keep to keep going. I was quite happy to sell it on my own and take the full cut. But the biggest reason that I liked having control over it was simply because I wanted to do a subscription model. Because I think for a lot of people, when you're not new to when you're new to selling a commercial product, you're scared out of your wits of this support thing and how much it's going to cost of your time and how expensive it's going to be in terms of your time and how much it's going to take. So I wanted to have a subscription model from day one, basically saying, you know, we want to provide you with outstanding support, but to get that, you need to pay by a subscription.
Excellent. And then we can see the seeds being planted where you went eventually, but we'll get to that. I like how everything's revolving around in a circle and all intertwines. Yeah. I'll let Jason ask you a few questions so I don't hog it all. Jason, over to you.
Yeah, I guess one question I have as we're all developers, how do you spot like the little niches that you've kind of like really come across? I mean, like you know, Parallax and even we'll get into, you know, subscriptions and stuff like that, but like you kind of always seem to be like, okay, yeah, let's do this and see where it takes me, and it's been pretty successful.
Yeah, I think the easiest way is to see something you want that no one else can give you, because then it's just like, well, if I can build this, I can't be the only one who wants it, and even if I am, at least I'm getting it, and then if people want to buy it as well, all the better. That's certainly the easiest way. I mean, I think there's like a lot of people who are much, much more strategic and analytical about how they come up, how they find niches and underserved markets and things like that, and do sort of, you know, keyword research or search volume or Google Trends and that kind of idea. I'm not sure. I think in general, at least the approach I've always taken is just something that I've wanted that hasn't been there, and then the worst case scenario is you get what you want, you learn a bunch of stuff as you do it, and then you get to release it.
I think, yeah, you're basically scratching your own itch, but I think the difference with you, Brent, is that you actually dog food everything that you do as well, so you're using it all the time, which it obviously maintains your passion, you want to iterate more, you want to add features, whereas a lot of other people, I wonder how, like if they create a theme for an industry that they're not in, for example, how do they go, I should add this new feature because the industry's changed, whereas you're using your own product, you're making it better, all your products, and you're making them better, so you've got that passion and drive just to keep making them better, I guess, which is pretty cool.
And you just grow it organically as far as marketing? You actually say, okay, this is good, I've been using this for some time, and I'm going to put this to market, and then I know you mentioned a little bit of Google AdWords, but do you like really hard press advertise or anything like that?
So 5.3 is a very different story to the WooCommerce stuff I've done, because we'll get to that, but the big advantage, so 5.3 was like, okay, here's this new thing that I'm about to put out into the universe. Like, no one's heard of me, no one's heard of this theme, no one's heard of anything to do with it, except for maybe Parallax. So how can I grow it both organically with Parallax and through sort of paid stuff? And that was Google AdWords on search terms, because I was pretty confident if people were searching for a Parallax WordPress theme, they knew exactly what they wanted, and I had what they were looking for, or some variation of what they were looking for. In terms of other, it really depends on the product, whether you're better to grow through like an organic brand, a brand sort of approach, or whether to grow through a strategic direct sort of marketing search advertising approach. Something like a Parallax theme solves one very simple problem very easily, so it works quite well in search advertising. Something like subscriptions, because it's built on top of WooCommerce and then WooCommerce is on top of WordPress, gets a little bit more muggy about how you would direct target that, because it's pretty unlikely someone just looking for a way to sell a subscription of the month box or something like that would have the familiarity with WordPress and also with WooCommerce to be able to say, okay, this all makes sense to me, when they come to the landing page. Whereas people who already know WordPress and have heard of WooCommerce, if they come and see the video sort of showing what you can do with subscriptions, they go, oh, that's cool, I need to sell a subscription product, that's exactly what I need. So I think in terms of that, and also in terms of that, it's all sort of piggybacking on the Woo brand.
Cool.
So I don't have to do as much marketing anymore.
Yeah, true. So in terms of your first WordPress commercial plugin, What was it and how did it start? Was it, I mean, you've done Bolt, you did WooCommerce, digital goods, you've got subscriptions. Which one was the first? What started it all and got you excited?
So Bolt, we'll get to Bolt later, I think. I never actually sold that. That was like a prototype for how to, we'll get to that later. But so PayPal Digital Goods for WooCommerce was the first plugin which I ever sold. And I originally wrote that because I'd used PayPal Digital Goods when setting up the subscription stuff to sell 5.3, and it was, a complete pain in the butt to write this system that was building everything from scratch and then was still just relying on PayPal to manage things. And so I thought, I was talking to Dan at the time from WP Commerce and about getting PayPal Digital Goods into WP Commerce for stuff we were doing with Ryan McHugh at the time. And I thought, well, this WooCommerce thing's pretty new. I think it had been out about a month or 6 weeks or something by that time. And I thought, well, while I'm writing this one for WP Commerce, I'm going to write it for WooCommerce as well and just see, like, get a feel for WooCommerce and what it's like and how hard it is to write stuff on top of it. And then if I can sell it afterwards, all the better. Otherwise, I can just pull it over and use it to sell 5.3 instead. And it was something crazy, like about a week, 2 weeks of development to get it into WP Commerce and about 2 days to get it into WooCommerce or 3 days to get something working in WooCommerce. And that was my first time when, both from a commercial sense, I went, well, this is cool. They've got this marketplace they're talking about creating. I could sell it there. But also from a technical sense, I thought, well, this is something pretty cool to build on. And if I can build something like that in a couple of days, imagine what else I could do with weeks or months.
Yep, and then from there you release it to WooThemes, who actually do a full plugin audit. And how was that experience? Was there much to change? What time frames did it take? Because I know the boys are pretty quick normally.
Yeah, it was pretty. So things were super different in those days. Like this it would have been like 2 months, maybe 3 months after they'd launched WooCommerce. I like sent an email. I can't even remember if I just like had found Mike and Jay online or if I submitted a form on their website or something, but just emailed them saying, "Hey guys, I've got this PayPal Digital Goods option which you don't have an extension for yet. It's pretty cool. It can do like on-page purchasing and rather than going through the checkout, would you be interested in selling an extension?" And they said, "Yeah, send it through. We'll check it out." And they had a look over it, and I did a video to show them how it works and everything like that. And it was pretty good. I mean, I guess like an audit's I'd been writing WordPress code for sort of 3 years or something, 4 years by that stage. So a lot of the things they check for in the audit, I'd like to think that I was already kind of doing. Yeah, like it was the stuff that I was making the mistakes on 2 years earlier or 3 years earlier. So that wasn't too bad. And the whole thing was like it's got a special library in there for PayPal, but the whole thing wasn't a very large extension, so it wasn't a grueling process. And certainly, yeah, it was a little bit more relaxed than it is these days, I think.
Yeah, cool. So from there, what made you go, okay, subscriptions, I want to make this better and release that on top of WooCommerce as well. What inspired you and how long was your first code binge? Version probably 0.1.
So I mean, subscriptions originally was super different to what it is now. It was originally just connecting WooCommerce to PayPal to sort of create the subscription with PayPal. So it didn't have anything like what it had in there now. And when I first set out, I think I went, this would take about 2 to 3 weeks to do based on my experience with writing the digital goods extension. And then it took, I think it was about, I think by about the fourth or fifth week, I was kind of like, oh, this is going way over time, this is massive kind of thing. And then because there's all sorts of crazy stuff with like tax calculations and everything that I just hadn't realized from the outset. And I think it was about 6 weeks before I had basically something I was ready to show them. So six weeks, to get a version one beta basically,
One beta. And did you have any beta testers in that time, or had you just tested it that heavily yourself that you're going, oh, I know, like, it's good to have someone look over it and review it?
Yeah, I did actually. I was quite lucky in that one of the smart things, this gets back to the question you were talking about before, Jason, about how do you find these niches. WooThemes have an ideas board, ideas.woothemes.com, and you can go there right now and see things that people are crying out for WooCommerce, like point of sale and stuff like that. But certainly at that time, there was like there was a bunch of people on there who were saying they wanted to do recurring payments or subscriptions and talking about it. So I just put a note on there saying something like, I've built most of this out, or like a working version of this out. If you want to give it a try, shoot me an email here and you can beta test it. I think there was about probably 6 or 7 people at that stage. I'd have to check, but something like that who were beta testing it, which certainly like coming from 5.3, where I think it was like, it was a good time before I had 6 or 7 people using it. It was cool to have 6 or 7 people before I'd even launched it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. I think Jason's got a few questions for you.
What made you hitch yourself to Woo, you know, and thinking, okay, you know what, the first plugin was good, let me make another one? And
yeah, that's a really good question. It was partly that technical stuff that I was talking about earlier, where I really felt like the code base that Mike Jolly and Jay and the other contributors at the time had come up with was really, really quite modern and quite strong and nice to work with. And it was also a business decision. So I'd thought about writing it, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be worth the commitment to actually build it. And then the sales stats that I got on my PayPal digital goods extension, we used to just get like a payout at the end of the month. There was nothing showing us how many sales or anything like that. And so I think it was something like, I can't remember, $50 or $100 or something in the first month that it was released. And I was kind of like, oh, cool, this is, you know, a good little side business. And then WooThemes ran a sale or something like that in the second or third month. And so my basic growth chart was just like, you know, massive, massive hockey stick curve from 3 months worth of data. And I just sort of thought, wow, this thing's growing phenomenally. Not really realizing how much of an impact a sale could have on sales. And I was like, maybe it is worth investing in the subscriptions extension and building that out for it.
Cool. I guess one of the main things you've kind of touched on already is that when you're releasing under the WooThemes banner, you get good marketing and also a lot of support, which is really good because it can support itself can be overwhelming. So what's the process like there for you, and how many tickets kind of get pushed to you because the boys or the girls now can't resolve an issue with your plugin? Like, explain the process a bit there, I guess.
Yeah, so that's actually another it's a part of the answer I should have included to the last question about why I hitched myself with Woo. I really loved their model of providing that first level support because it means you don't have to scale a support team or grow a support team around the product as early as you do if you're releasing it through your own Steam, and you can certainly continue to provide a good service to a larger customer base. And WooThemes obviously had experience in this in growing a support team and training support people already, so that they're in a much better position to be doing it than I was. So the process is you'll submit a ticket. They've experimented with a lot of different things over the years in terms of having someone who does first response on the ticket and routes it to the checks that there's everything in there that's needed to try and resolve the ticket reproduce the bug. But I think at the moment it's just I think the queue is basically just the everyone every support person at WooThemes has something like a 25 new tickets a day or something like that quota plus their existing tickets. And I think it's sort of you jump in. Certain people have certain areas, so some people will be just on WooThemes, some will be just on WooCommerce. So before Patrick Rowland moved over or moved up to a developer position in WooThemes, he and Scott Basgard for a while were subscriptions only support people because the extension's getting so large, it pays a lot to have people who are getting that deeper level of knowledge in it. And now I think, I'm not sure if they're training up, there's a few of the other guys, the newer guys who I've been working with quite a bit the last few weeks, so I'm not sure if they're sticking with that model or if they're looking for more of a broader model where people have an idea of all the extensions.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, I'm not sure how many tickets they get a day, but it's a hell of a lot, and it's a pretty massive job to manage that. So I think that very early on, knowing that I had to handle an nth degree of the support that came through, it was a big, big factor for me, knowing that WooThemes would be scaling their support team in that side, and I'd just have to handle the tricky tickets that came through.
Yeah, and especially with e-commerce, because it's something that people don't like waiting for. If there's a bug, you're talking about money. So when you've got a team there so you can actually sleep, and then people can actually get some help, that's like you can sleep at night.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's very true when you say that. I think support has like all sorts of interesting idiosyncrasies in its own self, and then e-commerce support in particular has a lot of its own, both in terms of the transactions and the bugs generally being quite a bit more complicated than things like 5.3 or the theme support I've done in the past, and then also in terms of the actual impact of that bug. I think the worst thing you can do with a theme is take someone's site down if you're doing something really silly and they get a white screen of death. Whereas with e-commerce, you can do all sorts of worse things. Cost the vendor money, cost the customer money, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yep. So WP
is if you're a developer wanting a product, hitch your wagon to a company that already has the support and does that first level of support.
Yeah, I would absolutely. I mean, so it's been 2 and a bit years since I started writing subscriptions and PayPal Digital Goods, and literally only in the last month and a bit have I really like launched the new company brand, because it didn't really matter before having a company brand. And even the reasons I'm launching it aren't to find customers, or the reasons I've launched aren't to find customers. It's to grow a company and find staff and give them something a bit more attractive to hitch their wagon to, because Woo Themes do such a good job of the marketing side of things.
Cool. So in WP Elevation, you had a watch this space moment when you're referring to Bolt and support for free software. Have you got some exclusive insights there that you can share with us?
I always worry about talking about things, giving a scoop until everything is finished, because it generally, particularly when it's like side projects, it always takes significantly longer than what you expect. But yeah, so now that Matt Allen is full-time with Prosperous, we've been working with Jason Conroy of Finding Simple to look at how we can bring Bolt from the prototype I wrote sort of 3 or 4 years ago into the modern era of having a WP API in WordPress 4.1, having WooCommerce as like a powerful e-commerce engine sitting behind your store, and looking at also how the concept of Bolt was always super convenient support for plugin users, and convenient and subscription or revenue for free plugins on that side for plugin developers. So it's almost like a way of connecting the two in a transaction that makes it easier for the plugin developer to actually set up the transaction, and easier for the customer to get support so that they're willing to pay to be guaranteed of support. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's been a problem since like the first plugins I released with WordPress. How do you charge the support? How can you offer support? Yep. And it's always something I've really wanted to tackle. So it's been always been on the back burner, always on the side, and the last few months have really been working more with Jason on it and Matt on it to see if we can get something like that up and out, and then sort of see how it's received, if plugin developers who are releasing their code free in WordPress.org are actually looking to sell support and make a living of providing support but keeping the code free and open, or if they're looking for just selling it behind a paywall. I think it's interesting. I heard yesterday on the Dradcast actually how Pippin has released his latest affiliate plugin, Affiliate WP. Mm-hmm. It's completely open source on GitHub, even though it's a commercial plugin, because he wants to continue to get that kind of collaboration from developers that he's done an amazing job with EDD. But he also knows that having a business model alongside of it and selling it is a great way to actually sustain it and keep it developing in the way users want. So I think it's really interesting that he's done that, and that's sort of a little bit of a validation for what we're hoping to do with Bolt. But it'll be interesting to see if customers are actually willing to pay when the actual plugin can be downloaded free, or if they're not interested in paying for support at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are some plugins in the repo that people have. If you actually want support within 24 hours, then you go to their website, you send them some money, and then things will happen there. So you're actually leaving WordPress, and the transaction isn't very seamless. Whereas where you're taking Bolt is really just simple and easy, and it's all gonna it's gonna be interesting to see where it goes, because I like the flow.
Yeah, I think the flow is really, I mean, it's not a novelty, but it's just, it's like a feature, but it really is like the, if it works, that's the killer feature, that it's much easier for you to offer support to customers because they don't have to find your company website or brand or anything like that. They get it from the dashboard when they've installed your plugin, and also much easier for users to actually submit tickets. And hopefully, one thing we're really hoping to do with that is to provide better information to plugin developers. Because the ticket's actually submitted from their WordPress dashboard, you can get things like the version of WordPress they're running, the versions of plugins they've got running, that kind of stuff, which usually takes, you know, 2 to 3 back and forth tickets before you actually get that, meaning you've wasted a bunch of touch time when you could get it automatically.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. So next up, we've got some application workflow questions, so I'll throw it over to Jason so he can ask a few questions.
How does your team set up your testing environments?
So it depends. Lately, we've been using a bit more Vagrant, but that's because when there's two very different things, or it's two very different circumstances, releasing a plugin out into the wild and creating an application on WordPress. Creating an application, something like Bolt, if you're doing a service or something like that alongside of it, it makes a lot of sense to use Vagrant because it means everyone working on it can get the same environment and make sure that everything's going to be working in production. I think when you're releasing a plugin out into the wild, it's really beneficial to let people use it however the hell they want to use it because that's what happens when you release it. So if they're using MAMP or something like that, or XAMPP, let them use that. If they're using Vagrant or something, if they like to do development on Linux or Windows or whatever, it's just you let them do however they're most comfortable doing because ideally you're going to find some kind of quirk in their development setup that is probably exists out there in the wild of all the different WordPress installations.
Do you do any automated testing or manual testing, or you have unit tests?
So in the last version of subscriptions, version 1.5, we moved over from when I was saying before how subscriptions started, it started as just a sort of middleman between PayPal and WooCommerce. So we didn't need to worry too much about scheduling and managing payments and doing all that kind of stuff internally. Whereas now it's really grown as more modern payment gateways like Stripe, which allow for credit card tokenization, it actually manages the transaction now, which means that we needed to move from WP Cron's scheduling into something that was far more robust, far more scalable, had traceability, so if things go wrong, we can look at the logs of did the schedule actually trigger. And I worked with Jonathan Brindley, a phenomenal developer down in Florida, on actually building that out. And we did it as a separate library so that on the one hand, it didn't have to inherit all the legacy code of subscriptions, and also that we can eventually use it. It can be used by other plugins for a start and maybe one day make it into WooCommerce Core. It's already being used by follow-up emails, another extension. But the takeaway of that is that it's like 100% test coverage on that. Because one of the reasons I wanted to work with Jonathan on that was because such a fundamentally important system, it had to be done right, and we had to know before we released that this was going to work on X many thousands of sites to like handle payments without any failures. And if there was a failure, we needed to know exactly why and be able to prevent that ever happening. He did a phenomenal job on that. It's an amazing thing to see the test, like get that kind of test coverage and to have that kind of certainty. It was interesting because some of the things in the real world weren't picked up in the unit tests, but that's part and parcel with unit tests. Unit tests are only as good as your ability to foresee things in the world. And hopefully we'll see. Subscriptions 2.0 is going to be the first version where I'm going to actually really change the structure and really be able to change things since basically 2+ years ago with version 1. Because it uses semantic versioning where you can only break backward compatibility with major releases. So I'd like to move a lot more of it into unit testing, but it's quite difficult, a lot of the things in unit testing on top of WooCommerce when you have this sort of state-based flows and trying to test all of those things. So we'll see how much we can get unit tested in subscriptions in 2.0.
And 2.0 sounds a little bit scary when you're going to break backwards compatibility. So what's your plan about the previous versions before that? Are you going to maintain those and say to your customers, okay, for, I don't know, 3 months, I'll maintain them? Or are you going to, like, how are you going to try and handle the process?
Yeah, I mean, when I say break backwards compatibility, any function or API will still exist, and it'll just be self-deprecated where it throws a notice. But it'll be more the underlying data storage and structure and how something's returned. So at the moment, a subscription object or the data structure in a subscription is just an array. And it has data in there that it really doesn't need in there. It's got an array isn't really the ideal format because it means you have to populate the whole thing before people can access any of the fields on it. So it's inefficient. So we're going to move over to an actual subscription object on that. And it's going to be interesting. That will be the killer, that if people are using API functions and expecting an array back, then we're going to need to figure out some tricky way to deal with that if we provide a new set of API functions which return the object and maybe keep the old set of functions and deprecate them which return the array. So if you're using those, you get a notice, but it also gives you the array you wanted, whereas if you're using the new functions, you get all the advantages of performance improvements as well as having methods and things like that on the actual subscription object.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be the longest beta process ever, I think, because I know even with the WooCommerce core, they break back like bits and pieces of backward compatibility most releases, and they do sort of months of beta testing, but it's still there's code out there in the wild which isn't up to date with it. So I think we'll probably do something. I'm not sure. I'll have to be talking to the WooThemes guys closer to the release, but I think it'll be something like it'll be finished, done, fully tested internally, and then it'll be like 3 months before we actually launch it and say, okay, everyone can install this now, but you know, be careful.
Yeah, definitely have to be careful. I'm actually working on a project now that uses some of those APIs, and it'll be when you upgrade to 2.0, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly it'll all be documented. Like everything that's changing is going to be documented, but that's not enough, I think. And it's kind of a funny thing because I really wish these changes happened a year ago, or even like, because I always knew they were coming, but I always feel like it's going to move along quicker than it actually happens. So doing it sort of 2.5 years after it's released is quite a difficult thing to say, okay, any developer who's taken a subscription array and is accessing indexed element on that array, you probably should check your code with this version. But I think because of the way it's structured, I mean, it's also the structure's going to change a lot, and they'll actually be API functions rather than having to use methods on the static classes. So I think we should be able to do some trickery where if you're using those API functions, we give you things the new way. If you're accessing the functions from the old method, then we can just straight up give you how it was before and just throw the notices. Because I really hate breaking backward compatibility and doing that to site owners and store owners, and because that's the, you know, it's the beauty of WordPress, right? That you can use it and you can use WooCommerce and do all these cool things without having to worry about upgrading and everything. So I really want to try and do it in a way that is still works, but everything gets the benefit of the sort of new structuring.
I suppose, yeah, with your notices, people are used to seeing them. So, yeah, if you'll do the usual, here's the old function, you should be using this function. And I guess in your PHP doc for the new function, you can even have a link to your documentation to actually explain, hey, here's a situation, here's how to learn. And, like, I guess it's basically an education process as well as a release.
Yeah, there's two, like, you have to make it as easy as possible for developers to upgrade for a start. And the two use cases you have are the sites which have custom development and the developer was just someone they found for a one-off job on Odesk or Codable or something like that, and they're incredibly hard to move along. But in terms of the people who have a developer that they know or have a relationship with, you want to make it like super easy, like an afternoon, maybe a day max kind of thing for them to migrate to the new system. And a big part of that is documentation, using those underscore deprecated function or deprecated method functions in WordPress and things like that.
Cool. Okay, so my next question that I had, which you've kind of answered, I think. So my question was going to be about when someone actually asks you for some support, a lot of the time when it's just WordPress. It's like, are you using the latest version of WordPress? Whereas with your WooCommerce plugins, you go, are you using the latest version of WordPress? Are you using the latest version of WooCommerce? Are you using the latest version of my plugin? What software are you running? And all these kind of questions, which yeah. can be quite difficult. But I think you've mentioned earlier that Vault seems to want to solve this problem. So is this all going to tie in here? Or?
Yeah, I don't know what would happen with... So WooCommerce already has a system status page. And they request with support tickets to WooThemes, they request that you include that. And it's yep. it's awesome because it gives you all that data, like which versions of which plugins they have installed, you know, things like the amount of memory they have running on the site, PHP versions, that kind of stuff. So and it's a tremendous help when you get that. Usually, like, it's hard to submit, so some people don't submit it. But, yeah, I mean, there's two ways to deal with the versioning stuff. The one is prevention and trying to have your code be backwards compatibility with version 2.0 of WooCommerce and with the current version 2.1, and if it's not, handling it gracefully. And the other is, dealing with it when it comes in support and retroactively trying to figure out what's going on. And prevention is always better. if you can get your head around all the things you need to work with, prevention is always better.
So, yeah, the next questions are regarding scaling a commercial WordPress plugin. So, obviously, you've got a few under your belt. At what point did you get to the stage where you're like, oh, well, I need to work with someone else? And how did you go about finding developers to work with? Because it's your, like, subscriptions especially, it's got quite a big code base. So, you want someone who's using it frequently and who's a good coder too. Like, how did you go, all right, I'm ready to scale, and how did you tackle that process?
I've certainly worked with people most of last year as contractors just to get bits and pieces done, and guys who have sort of maybe 5 hours a week or 10 hours a week on a side job or something like that. And those guys were always people who they were using subscriptions on a client site or something like that, and they might have, so for example, one of them submitted like a SQL optimization pull request because it's all in a private GitHub repository, but there's about... Well, there's all the WooThemes teams in there, and then probably about another 15 or 20 people that will send me a few emails with developer questions and things like that, and I'll add you to the GitHub repo, and mm-hmm. we can do the discussion on there. So if other people have the questions, I can just link them to the issues. And some of those people over the sort of year or 18 months or so have submitted pull requests in or had, you know, it's been clear just from their conversation that they clearly know what they're doing. And so a lot of last year, they were the people, well, that's kind of how I would find and work with people on little bits and pieces of subscriptions development. But and it was really good because it means there's not really that training time or getting people up to scratch. But the problem is those guys, particularly unless you can convince them to basically leave their full-time job or jump, take a risk and join a small company, you're only ever going to get a tiny little bit out of them. And eventually, like, it's not that same sort of commitment as having someone full time, where you all the knowledge they're gaining in working on the software is going to be around in 6 months, a year, 2 years, hopefully, you know, 10 years, 15 years. And so this year in particular, I've started to look more at how to find full time people and how to find people rather than working on bits and pieces here and there. How to bring people into a company and create a company around it where people know they're going to be have a job basically as long as they want it. And it's hard, it's really hard. I mean, you sort of ask when I realized the need or when I started thinking about it. I mean, I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit, so Prosperous brand launched maybe a month or so ago. I'm a little bit embarrassed to say when I actually started working on that and also how many people I've tried to hire along the way and not been successful in hiring and all the sorts of failures along the way. But it's just part of the process. I mean, it's if you want to grow a company, I mean, I certainly feel more comfortable in code than I do in hiring and a lot of the sort of entrepreneurial aspects of growing a business. But I think it's important, and I hope that we'll have more information going out about it in the next few weeks, but I hope that what we're doing is a pretty good option for good developers who want to come on board.
Yep. And you're doing well with the branding too?
Yeah. Getting Anthony Cole from Australia to be sending out shirts to all my Australian peeps.
I guess another thing when you're trying to scale a the plugin, it's not just about the staff. Well, a lot of it is, but also there's the product itself. So for your kind of things, if you want to push WordPress to its limits, you'll often hit barriers. So for example, one you've mentioned is trying to work a better way of doing a cron system because WP cron isn't a real cron. So you've kind of created your own solution and worked around that. So projects like WP API, for example, are really pushing WordPress into where it should be heading in terms of more being more usable, not relying on WordPress so much. On the back-end side of things is WP API, for example, I've seen you do a few pull requests along the way helping out there. Are you really excited about that project? Can you see a use case for using it within your plugin?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's pretty much what's got me excited about redoing Bolt, because the prototype that I built years ago was basically just an iframe pulling in like HTML from the server, whereas now you can build like a backbone app with a proper RESTful API serving from WordPress. And I think really, like, in terms of WordPress's future, that's turning it into like that content server or that sort of whatever server by providing like a strong RESTful API alongside of it is one of the most important things to happen to it since I don't know in recent history. So yeah, incredibly excited about that.
That's good. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it too, because basically it's using WordPress as a data store, and you don't need WordPress, and because of that you can do mobile apps, and you can do all sorts of things. Are there any other things in core that you've hit that you've gone, I'd like to implement this or see something added, like any kind of things, like this kind of more talking about the future of WordPress core, and if your product has hit any other walls where you can go, maybe someone needs to rethink how this section works.
I mean, scheduling was the big one. It's actually probably the opposite. Anytime I haven't used a WordPress API or WordPress system, I've been burned and eventually had to turn back to it or change back to it, which is interesting. I mean, I think so much of WordPress in how it's built and how it's run on so many different sites and servers, like you've got all this sort of intrinsic performance optimization and everything in there because of just the large user base and open source nature of it. I would almost say in terms of like things that need to be done in WordPress, I don't know, scheduling is like the biggest aspect of subscriptions, and that's being handled now with the Action Scheduler. WooCommerce is a good platform for the rest of it. Things like calculating taxes across all different countries and or all different cities and states and all sorts of crazy stuff, and managing shipping or no shipping. And so subscriptions really just sort of piggybacks on both of those. And I would probably say that it's the opposite. Anytime I haven't used a WooCommerce or a WordPress API, I've actually been burned and had to go back and move over to that.
Okay. The only other one that springs to mind for me that you might have hit is core meta and how it's all serialized and just one big chunk, and you got to unserialize something then use that. Have you had any issues with that, or is that why you're moving from in the next version to moving away from arrays into objects? Are you trying to get around some of this?
Yeah, I mean, originally a subscription, because it wasn't really any kind of object in WooCommerce or in WordPress, it was just like a user meta array, because it was just a store of what the product they purchased was, like how many payments are being completed on it, because it was thinking that it was all being done by PayPal and it was just keeping a record. As it's grown and it's become its own thing, it now is order item meta. So each sort of attribute of a subscription is its own row in the database, but it's using the key value store of order item meta table rather than any WordPress table. And even that, I mean, again, it's in terms of being burned, that's part of the reason for the move, is I'm moving everything over to post meta and the post table for subscriptions from there, because the performance of my queries and having so much different data across so many different tables just doesn't scale as well as using core WordPress APIs.
Cool. I might throw it over to Jason again for a few more questions.
Yeah, so what are some of the goals of Prospress? Like, do you have other plugins in the queue that you're going to release over the next year, or are they going to be away from Woo, or is it always just going to be on Woo?
No, the company is definitely riding on the shoulders of WooCommerce. I think it to me is it's what I wanted to see from Prosperous the plugin 5 or 6 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever I started writing WordPress code, in terms of being like this really easy to use universal e-commerce platform, be it whether you're creating a store for your own self or a marketplace or crowdfunding or auctions or anything like that, you can take advantage of WooCommerce to do that because it manages the payments and has all these APIs in there for you to use. So definitely the future of the company is on the back of WooCommerce. What that looks like in the immediate term, there's a couple of little plugins we're going to release. There's no plans to really tackle another monster plugin. I think subscriptions code base is enough to keep us on our toes for a while, and then have a few smaller plugins of just interesting things that can be done and will help store owners. I certainly want to explore how WooCommerce can be used to solve certain pain points as sort of a service side rather than an extension on top of WooCommerce. And that's certainly what we're exploring with Bolt and how we can use WooCommerce as an e-commerce engine behind providing paid support. I think that's probably the immediate term in 6 months, and then the sort of grander ambitions, we'll see. It's certainly too soon to talk about whether those will come to fruition or not.
with the API coming, do you see maybe, I know WooCommerce is, well, Woo teams have said that they're not going to make WooCommerce a SaaS product. With API coming around, kind of seems like that might be a good path to maybe go down.
I would love for them to do that. I mean, I've sort of mentioned it to Woo guys in the past, and I think they know the opportunities there, and I think they kind of just didn't have a great trial of it a number of years ago when they were experimenting, because they felt like there was certainly, I mean, yeah, they felt like they were a plugin company or a development company rather than a hosting company, and certainly it's a very different business to provide hosting, because that's what a service company is, particularly when there's so much code already available for WooCommerce. It's really turning into a hosting company. But I mean, we've seen brilliant companies in the past transform from one opportunity to the next where they move with the market. So I'd really love to see. I certainly don't ever think Prosperous will tackle a sort of general e-commerce hosting for like Shopify of the US or something like that. It's certainly something I think a lot of people would benefit from if it was there, and also the WooCommerce brand and name would benefit from if it was there, because a lot of the issues I see are things to do with hosting related setups or people not doing things that you don't even think about anymore when you manage your own hosting that can cause issues if you haven't got them set up. And yeah, I think providing the super easy to manage and use store is a very valuable thing. And whether they go down that or not, we'll have to wait and see.
Cool. Any other questions, Jason?
I think that's what I got.
Cool. I might let you wrap up the show then.
All right, great. First, thanks, Brent, for coming on board.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Where can people reach out to you?
Yeah, they can grab me on Twitter, then Brent on Twitter. I've got like a personal landing page at brent.io where they can submit a contact form for an email, or on GitHub, then Brent on GitHub. And I think I've got like social accounts for Google Plus and whatnot, but I don't really use it. So hit me up on Twitter or GitHub. That's the two that I actually use.
Awesome. Awesome. Bronson, where can people find you?
Cool. You can find me on Twitter at BronsonQuick. My business is at Senza. That's the main one for me as well. Don't use Google Plus too much except for these Hangouts, which is fun. Yeah, that's about it. And what about you, Jason? Where can people find you?
People can find me at Rez or Rez.com. And I use Google Plus. You can find me there too. Please, everybody, check out WPDevTable/subscribe if you want to get a little bit more insight onto, you know, when you're going to have them. We try to have these once a month. It's really loose, but you know, we get through it once a month. So I want to thank you for tuning in. If you want other tips also, please go to /subscribe. And if you like the show, then like, share, subscribe via iTunes, the site, YouTube, anything. And, of course, give us a comment. And catch up on our past shows if you want to get the dev on. Thanks again, guys.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.